wondering in camera. I think we need to probably start so that we can finish early. Maybe before you can help us in closing that door. I think the people that have been invited are already here, so I'm sure we can start and at least we've got about 4 members with us. Welcome, members. We've got a strong rule here that everybody who comes and make a presentation, they must give us documentation 2 or 3 days before. That is not the situation this time. I'm referring to you members that maybe I am to blame myself. Let me take the blame. If you want to kill me, then you can kill me. I'll accept it. What had happened is that we said we were going to call OHASA, which is the Hospital Association of South Africa. But the unfortunate part is that there was a misunderstanding between me and the secretariat. So the document that was sent out to them was not the document that we needed to talk about. So it had to be changed at the last minute, and they had to change their presentation because the communication that went to them was not right. So I apologize for that. So we're going to be getting the presentation now. But I'm going to tell you what the presentation is all about with them, because it was corrected and it was sent to you, but it was too short a time for them to be able to give us something yesterday. But let me start by saying, maybe we need to remind ourselves, repetition is not wrong, it's only that it's empowered by. Now that the people that have invited are here, I'm going to be welcoming all of you, the members, before we introduce ourselves, which we are going to do very soon. I think, Hasa, you must understand, you have been called by the Portfolio Committee for help to come and present in front of them. We are government. Government is made up of 3 important areas, which is the judiciary, the executive, and the legislature. We happen to belong to the head arm, which is the legislature. The legislature, what we do, we appropriate funds. In appropriating funds, we do that by law. But at the same time, we do oversight and we legislate laws. And the reason we're doing that is to try and transform specifically ourselves. Because being in legislature divides into different committees. And we happen to be that committee of health, which looks at the health issues, appropriating funds to health issues, making sure that we transform health. And we do that by when we do oversight and when we legislate and when we appropriate funding, we appropriate them such that there must be transformation in health if we feel that there's something that needs to be done. And as we know, that coming from the before the 20 years ago, the health services were not for everybody. And in fact, the health indicators were very bad. So the aim is to make sure that we transform the health services so that they can handle these 3 important challenges that we have in South Africa. One of them being poverty, the other one being inequalities, the other one being unemployment. So those are the 3 important things that we want to transform health services so that they can be able to handle those challenges. But to handle those challenges, I think everybody agrees that we need to have an economic growth that is going to be able to handle that. So we need a country that has got a good economic growth so that it can handle the threat that I'm talking about. Now, for you to have a good economic growth, you need to have a good human resource in the country. Now, the human resources is actually in 2 ways, in 2 parts. Part of the human resources are quantities of the people that are doing the work, which we think birth and life expectancy. Birth and death are those things that make the quantities in South Africa. If we prolong the life expectancy, we're making sure that the quantities of human beings are there. If people are born and they contribute to the economy, that increases the quantity of people. But the second one is the quality of those people, the quality of the people that we have. That's where health comes in very much. Where you say very few people are always on sick leave, they're always working, they're healthy, they're contributing to the economy. Even at the old age, they still continue. So we've got that quality and quality. Now, when you look at South Africa, look at those challenges that I'm mentioning, and look at the human resources, you'll find that South Africa is very asymmetrical. South Africa has got three areas. In fact, one of them you can divide into two. South Africa has got urban. South Africa has got rural. South Africa has got peri-urban. And you can even divide rural into two. Rural, there are rural areas where you get villages and people that are staying there being reservoirs for the cattle, for the big cows to do the work. And then you get formal rural areas, which are the farms, which are but an economic spin-off, but they're not as concentrated as the villages that I'm talking about. So those both of them are rural areas, but they're different. Now, that poses a challenge in South Africa as to the healthcare services in that area. Not only the healthcare services, as to the quantities and the qualities of the human resources that are there, which we tie it up with the economic growth that we're talking about in South Africa. And obviously, in some of those areas, that's where you get your poverty. That's where you get your inequalities. And that's where you get most of the unemployment that we're talking about. So, as a portfolio committee, we thought that we needed to call you to come and talk to us. We're doing oversight, and we legislate in a way of trying to transform the health service so that they can respond to the challenges. Now, in calling you, we are not dictating to you, but we want to hear. According to the policies of government, which is made up of the government, as I explained, as to what is the policies of government, which are very important in this meeting, is one thing that we want. One policy that says most of our people don't know primary health care and they're not making use of it, even if it's there. Hence, you find that Chris Dani Parapana is always for everybody. It says that for me to get good health care services, I must be seen by a doctor at Parapana. There's no doctor that can see me in clinical clinic. So, to try and avoid that, we said they must be primary health care so that everywhere people could be taught so that they don't become ill. They could be preventative medicine. The second policy of government is rural development. That has been put. And it has been put specifically to avoid the exodus of people from rural areas to the big cities where people think that I'll get better services there. I don't need, I must leave my place. And the unfortunate part is that those who have got capacity are the ones that are giving the place. So it is in those areas that we said to you, can you come and present to us around these two policies? In presenting to us around the two policies, I said, we just want to listen. We're doing an oversight. One of the things that has become very clear is that to be able to do a proper oversight, we are not a portfolio committee for public health, nor a portfolio committee for private health. We are a portfolio committee for health services. And one thing that has been very clear is that we seem to be moving parallel. The private healthcare industry and the public healthcare industry, they're moving parallel. And if you know, the little mathematics that I did tells me that things that are parallel never meet. It's only those that are moving at angles that meet. Those that are moving at parallel areas, they never meet. And that actually makes us to be paramount of each other. The public is paramount of the private is paramount of. Now, in a way of trying to say, but importantly, both of them are very important. They are needed. And in fact, it's the situation that we found in South Africa that when the new government came in, it came in, there was private healthcare, there was public healthcare. And we can't do away with that. We just have to try and see how we make each other, how we find each other so that we can move forward. Hence, we called you so that you could give us a picture of what's happening in the private hospital industry, especially in these two areas. But if you look at those two areas that I'm talking about, they end up talking about the universal coverage. And it's a situation where, even if I'm a premium in solo, I must be able to retire there and be able to say, if something happens to me, I'll get good healthcare services, irrespective of me being in premium. If I've got a heart attack there, I must be able to get a good healthcare services. I know just last weekend, somebody around my area was bitten by a rankal. You know rankal, the snake? Rankal, how they kill you, they give you poison, and after giving you poison, after a few hours, you develop something that looks like myasthenia gravis, where your muscles become paralyzed, and you stop breathing and you die. Once you stop breathing, there's no oxygen. After lack of oxygen, then you die. So the simple thing is that to take that person and put him or her on a ventilator. And after a few hours, I mean after a few days, that is going to wear off and that person is going to be better. But fortunately, that person was not very far from a health institution. And he was taken to that health institution, ventilated, and the person is improving without even being given an antidote. So this is the situation that one. So we said we wanted to present to us as to rural health in the private hospital industry, preventative health. Is there something that is going on or is there nothing? And if there's nothing, then we just want to know. And that impinges on the universal coverage. As I said, wherever I am, I need to be very clear that I could put good healthcare services. And one area that is this, I've just heard that one of the areas that is making a lot of money for South Africa is in tourism. And there's what we call health tourism, which I think mainly it impinges on the private healthcare. Now, health tourism is in two parts. Health tourism is in those people that are coming from other countries to get good healthcare services in South Africa, and they pay for it. They come not as tourists, but as health tourists, because they're looking for healthcare services. That brings money to South Africa. And the other one in health tourism is that if I'm a tourist and I have to go to Port St. John's and I'm bitten by a mamba, what will happen to me? Or if I drown or get bitten by a shark, what will happen? Because I was just coming to enjoy myself at Port St. John's where there are no good healthcare facilities. And there's no private clinic. Somebody might say, I've got a medical aid, I want to go to a private, I want to choose where I go, what will happen. So it is in those that we thought we needed to call you so that you can make a presentation. But in a nutshell, I was trying to open up the meeting and welcome you. Members, welcome. I think most of the things that I talked about are the things that you are very much aware of. But I think our visitors need that there's some information about that and as to what's happening. So, members, welcome. I'm going to ask the members to introduce themselves. You might not know them, but if you could listen to them, then probably by the time we finish here, we would have forgotten who they are, but I'll keep on reminding you who they are. So, can we start from you, Honorable Sekgala Desai, and then we'll go down.
Good morning, my name is Maurice Sekgala Desai. Morning, everybody. My name is Molebogeng Grace, the member of the committee.
Good morning, all. I'm Denise Robinson, and I'm from Western Cape, as a member of this committee.
Good morning, my name is Sandra Henny, from Eastern Cape, member of this committee. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Greta Makosha Mutipa, member of this committee.
Beatrice Robo behind everybody, a member.
Over to you. I know a person that I've been in contact with is Dr. Bonena Tandisa. So Tandisa, let's give over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Sorry, Tandisa.
Yeah, I understand that you didn't get a presentation of time, but what I was asking now, don't we have it, even if it is not on time?
Okay, Chandisa, I want to tell us what's happening with the presentation.
Honorable Chair, thank you. I've arranged with Ms. Machalamba. I've given her a copy, an electronic copy, arranged for her to bring some copies for the honorable members. By the end of the presentation, hopefully it will be in your hands. Thank you very much for introducing us, Honorable Chair. But even before I thank you for introducing us, I must express our sincere gratitude for the invitation and the platform that you have created through that invitation.
Excuse me, Chair. Sorry. Maybe if Ms. Chandisa can introduce the members that she's coming here with, so that we have got an idea of who they are. Thanks.
Okay.
I thought you were still coming to that.
Yeah, but that I didn't accelerate that.
Okay.
My name is Jumisani Bomela. I'll be the main person presenting to you this morning. My portfolio in HALSA is that I'm the chief executive of the association. I'm not alone. I've got my team with me, and I'm going to introduce them, and I will, after that, say how we plan to deal and handle this session. On my right at the back, I've got Biren Viloya, who is a HALSA board member. He is an executive at the Mediclinic. At Mediclinic, the holding company, and he's going to be accompanied by Sarika, who's also from Mediclinic. Sarika Besasa from Mediclinic head office. That is the lady in front, and Biren is at the back. Next to Sarika, I've got the Tuminko Zuhud, an executive manager at NetCare, the group head office. He's an alternate board member of HALSA. I must just go on and say that we hope to all contribute, especially during the discussion and the Q&A session after the presentation, because the way we see the discussion going is that while the presentation will be high level and the questions may carry a little bit of detail that pertains to some of the work that is being carried out by private hospitals on the ground, and we will work as a team in ensuring that you get the appropriate answers to those questions. Having thanked the portfolio committee, I must agree with you, Honorable Chair, and in your introductory remarks when you say we have two parallel systems that need to come together. As HALSA, we cannot agree more with that statement, and hopefully by the end of the presentation and the discussion today, we will have explored a few details with regard to this undertaking and of support for the two systems to come together, as you have so eloquently articulated, Honorable Chair. In the invitation which I have on the screen, it's in one sentence, and that's to for the benefit of the members, so that as we present, they know what we have to prepare. The portfolio committee on health kindly requests your office to brief the committee on HASA's role in the national health insurance, impact on rural areas, and primary health care strategies. So that is the brief that informs the presentation that we have prepared for you today. I believe that the presentations of you have in front of you, they have been distributed. Thank you very much for that. It was not an omission on our part. We had time constraints like the Honorable Chair has explained. The nature of my presentation, Honorable Members, I would suggest that we view it as a coherent story that I am trying to tell. And while I do not know if it's clear enough on the wall there, or we need to switch off the light, just to make it more legible, especially to the people sitting at the back.
Sandra, if we switch off the light, I'm too dumb. You won't see me. Then I'll have to smile all the time. But can you help us and switch off the light? Irrespective of all, I'm not going to be disciplined. It doesn't matter.
We're trying to take you, because of the position you are sitting in, we're trying to take you out of view, sir. So we will welcome when you cannot see you. Okay. So then, the structure of the presentation is we've got three things at the top. My slides are not numbered. I'm sorry about that. But if you want to refer to the presentation, that's the hard copy that you have, you'll just have to glance at the screen at the top to see which page we're on. The three bullets at the top, they speak directly to the issues we've been asked to come and share some views with the committee on. The first one is that we are going to deal with is private hospital sector participation in the national health insurance, or as we like to view it, in universal access. That's the official term that is used by government is NHI. Private hospital presence in rural areas is the second area we'll deal with. Private hospital embracement of the primary health care. We've been asked to present on those two, but to complete the story, we would request that we be allowed to share some additional views on the following three areas. Both in the medical scheme industry, and we will contextualize it with the rest of the presentation, so that in the end, when we've dealt with everything, we are telling a coherent and logical story. The second part we would like to be allowed to share some views on is the demand for private healthcare and also private hospital price increases. Private sector participation in the NHI universal health or universal access to health. Let me start, Honorable Members, by making statement that will clarify upfront where we stand. HASA supports universal access. That's a policy statement. The private hospital industry is ready to participate in collaborative work with the private sector right now. The service delivery need in South Africa is current, and we believe that it should not be deferred. Hopefully, during the course of the presentation, we will speak to these areas and try to address and suggest ways of addressing them from our point of view. This is what private hospitals can deliver on public health. We believe that our health system, the current situation we are in within the health sector, has already made us ready to be able to deliver on certain important aspects that can make a difference right now. For example, and we would like to categorize, before I go into them, we would like to categorize them into clinical services. This is our competency as a sector. This is what we can deliver in good quality, efficiently, and we can do well. The clinical services, that first part that we want to speak to. Second part, in terms of what we can help and work together with government in ensuring delivery of, the second part is that the training of nurses, given the fact that nurses are the backbone of the health delivery system, we think this is an important area of participation for our sector in trying to uplift healthcare, health service delivery in the country. And we'll go a little bit more into that. We are also ready, and we are not just willing, but we are ready to play a significant role in the training of doctors by extending the training platform to private facilities. We all know about the current shortage of doctors and the shortcomings in the production lines. And we believe that the platforms for training of doctors haven't been exhausted, and there is spare capacity that has been left lying within the private hospital sector that can be used in the short term and help produce more doctors of better quality. And it is important for us to remember again that for those who are getting trained, and I'm sure the Honorable Chair will relate quite a lot to what I'm saying now, that the pathology, the nature of the sickness is not necessarily the same in the public and the private sector because of demographics. And the nature of technology that the trainees, the registrars, the specialists, the doctors get exposed to when they are training in the current platform, they may find different technologies in the public, in the private sector, because as it has already been said, that the two systems are running parallel. So what you see in the public sector is not necessarily the same that you would see in the private sector. And we think that our doctors, for them to get the best training, they should be exposed just to the content from a technical content point of view, and also from a point of view of volume, of getting more doctors to be trained. Because we've got space constraints, limited number of universities, limited number of training platforms, which we would be very happy to extend to include private hospital facilities. Private hospitals can use their expertise, which they've developed over the years, to share knowledge with the public sector on hospital, on matters such as hospital management. An example that we've, a simple example that we picked there is we could have twinning arrangements with at hospital management levels between public and private sector. And this could begin to address some of the management challenges that have already been acknowledged publicly that are faced largely in the public sector. And I would like to clarify here that we are not saying we are better than the public sector. All that we are saying is that we would like to learn from each other. There is much that we can learn from the public sector on the management side, and we think that there is also something that the public sector can learn just on the management side from the private sector, private hospital sector. What this requires for these things to happen, in our view, is a mutually acceptable procurement arrangement with the Department of Health. And this can be evaluated and monitored by an independent advisor. We see this as a lost opportunity in the sense that we believe some of the reasons we haven't been able to get this convergence has been the strict procurement policy that the various departments of health, provincial, mainly, local government, also have to comply with in being able to partner with private sector providers. And we think that there is room for a concerted effort to be pursued towards trying to bring onto the table some arrangements that are acceptable to public sector authorities that can draw in and bring in the participation of private sector providers, like private hospitals in this case, in a manner that is comfortable to the public sector authorities, in a manner that allows a greater number of people to access services that we can provide. And this is the key, this is the underlying message of this slide. I just want to continue on the theme of what we can deliver on public health. We are taking a public health view and perspective in the sense of integration between the private sector providers and the public sector providers. And that's the reason we're using the term public health rather than public sector. Examples of the roles that South African hospitals play in universal access environments elsewhere and in public-private partnership, PPPs. We can divide these into global, continental, and local, as in national, within South Africa. Globally, in Switzerland and in the UK, some of the South African private hospitals are participating in healthcare delivery in those countries. In Switzerland, 60% of Mediclinic's participation in that country is not with private sector patients. It is within the context of public health. In the UK, plus minus 85% of the participation of Netcare within the UK system is for public patients. NHS patients. And therefore, the story we're trying to share with the honorable members here is that we wouldn't like anyone to have the impression that the private hospital industry finds the thought of providing care to public patients or providing care and working together with government, we wouldn't like an impression to prevail, which we believe to a certain extent it does, that the South African private hospital providers are apprehensive and they would like the security and the cocoon of privately funded patients or private patients. They would like to maintain the status quo. Nothing could be further from the truth. The South African private hospital industry is standing at the door, knocking, trying to get the attention of authorities, stakeholders, to say there is something that we can offer. In Africa, we have next door to us an example that I would urge the honorable members, if there is any way of getting to view, understand how it works, an example of a public-private partnership that is currently underway with one of our South African health providers. It's a partnership between them and the Lesotho government. We are going to elaborate a little bit more on that just to show you how it works. And sometimes when we look at that model and see what has been achieved through that model, which we are going to share with the honorable members, we just think if we had just 10 of those in this country, what a difference it would make to our needy population. And locally there are various PPPs that are too few and sporadic in nature, and at the volume that they are in now, they are not making the difference that we would be looking to make. And the nature of those PPPs, I've listed them in bullet form there. It's just a model that is currently being used in South Africa, the build, operate, and transfer model, which we don't think maximizes what can be leveraged in the collaboration between the private and the public sector. In emergency services, there is a lot of collaboration on the ground there. And an interesting area of collaboration, and let me just explain what this is, the health bullet, where a new hospital will be built by government, and when it is thought that there's capacity constraints in getting it started to get it to operate and get up and running, where then there would be a collaborative agreement wherein private sector operators will be asked to come and kickstart this new hospital, and once it's up and running, then they would then exit the operation and leave the public sector, the government, to operate at that facility. The example that I've mentioned in Lesotho is so relevant for South Africa. And when I say that, I'm taking into account that in whatever we think should be done going forward, we must always take our current reality in South Africa. It's well and good to say this is what has happened in China, this is what has happened in Brazil, in the UK. That must also happen in South Africa. But their point of departure is from a different, maybe from a different reality to our own. And it is our reality that I think is going to determine if what we do moving forward in our health reform is going to take us on the right trajectory that ensures that in the long term we are able to deliver everyone in South Africa, both the private and public sector, we are able to deliver a sustainable quality healthcare system. This is an African country. It's a rural setting, even though Maseru is the capital city, but it's still a rural setting. A South African private hospital operator was asked to come, and this is the hospital, the picture on the wall in the presentation. This is the picture of the hospital at the time that the whole project started. The project is now up and running, it's complete, and this is the same hospital currently. This is not a private hospital. It's a hospital in Maseru that serves public patients, government patients, that has got a catchment area of referral clinics that are embedded in communities that surround, and it's got a feeder system of clinics that are embedded in the public sector. We've seen the buildings. I just want to make a few highlights of what has changed, what was there before, and what is there now, currently. The first thing, there's too many numbers there. I just want to summarize what they say. The first eight items there, they just speak to the fact that the utilization, the numbers that come through the door of this facility has increased significantly. And then we've got some health outcomes. Death rate has moved from 12% to 7%. Maternity death rate from 0.24% to 0.1%. Pediatric pneumonia rate, that the pneumonia that they acquire, children acquire while they are in hospital, the hospital acquired, has decreased from 34% to 11%. Stillbirth rate from 4% to 1%. So what has been achieved here is exactly what the Lesotho government was looking for. Better outcomes and quality healthcare services achieved through quality, through a sustainable delivery of quality healthcare services. We've just put in that slide just to highlight what could be better for healthcare than a 65% reduction rate in the death rate of babies. For any health system, for any country, for any health delivery, health service delivery situation. This is just to highlight some of the things that were some of the tools, the management tools that were used to achieve these good results with these good outcomes we've just been talking about. And this is just management tools really, and the reason why we are bringing this into the presentation is that we've said earlier that we would like to share. We would like to find acceptable arrangements of being able to share management expertise between the public and the private sectors. And these are some of the things that we were able to share as a sector in the Lesotho environment. Improving management and clinical system, protocols of well-functioning pharmacy system with reduced drugs, dropouts and deaths, a laboratory system providing test results within an hour, standards, policies, guidelines, requiring discipline and accountability. But when you look at these, really these are the management tools that anyone in any setting can use. And if they were able to implement these management tools, they will achieve similar results. What we envisage and would like to see is the holding of hands together between the private and public sector to try and share on these are the practical things that we think that can be shared. What we just said in a broad brush stroke earlier on that we would like to collaborate. These are the things that we would be bringing to the table. We would like to bring to the table in that kind of a collaboration. So therefore, that's another way of saying that we believe that we must find a way of working together and take advantage of the strength of our health system. There we've got strong areas that we are not exploiting within this within our overall health system, and a lot of those strong areas lie within the private health system. Within the private health sector. And with the two parallel systems that we have, we are not able to leverage those funds. The country has to tap, it must tap into the expertise that already exists within the private health sector. It's something that we think we owe to the country. The country deserves it, and we think that we should put on the agenda the mechanisms and the complexities and how easy that happens is something that we must do it. We will find ways to summon leadership within us to deal with the complexities that go with execution. But at the very least, we believe that these two statements, they sit dearly in our hearts as the private hospital sector. We've been asked to contextualize and talk to the strategies of our participation and how we see ourselves in the context of our presence and participation in rural settings and in rural areas. And in dealing with that question, we will start with the distribution of private hospitals. In the absence of contracting and finding an acceptable working arrangement, and I'm not saying this to point the finger to one or the other party, but the fact of the matter is that it's absent. There is no collaboration now. And in that absence of finding working arrangements from public health in the rural in the rural areas, the private hospitals have naturally found a footprint that matches the footprint of medical scheme members. As medical schemes have been the ones that have found a working arrangement that allows them to procure the services that are in the private hospital sector. It is for this reason that most private hospitals are located in urban areas. However, should public health authorities enter into private, public-private partnership arrangements or contracts or whatever you call them, but finding a way of working together with private hospitals to deliver care in the rural areas, private hospitals would then be able to extend their footprint deep into rural areas. I'm going to unpack this statement just now. I'm going to unpack it to the extent of explaining why there needs to be an agent that intervenes on behalf of those that cannot afford, in a class that is coming now. And it's, again, the nature of the reality I was talking about earlier, where we are saying there is a current reality in South Africa. How do we move from that current reality? If we look at this slide, I think what stands out in this slide is this. If we look at the, and the colors are not showing well, and it's worse, it's in black and white. But if we look at the 48% and 25% in the presentations in front of you, if you look at that, those two, this is the South African, the entire South African population. If you look at those two slices on the left, there's two smaller slices on the right, the 48% and 25%. If you look at those together, it's people who earn below the tax threshold. In other words, very low earning people, and people who do not earn an income at all. Now, if you add those two up, that's 75% of the population. In other words, 75% of the South African population, it doesn't matter what the price was, they wouldn't be able to purchase. They wouldn't be able to go and say, I'm paying for myself to get this service, regardless of the level of pricing. Even if you price it at R1,000 flat fee for every service, they do not have the money to go and purchase. This is 75% of the South African population. Now, this is the current reality I was trying to make us to appreciate. This is the South African reality. So if we are talking about somebody who can pay on their own, out of their own pocket, possibly for health services, for hospital services, we must just look on the right of that curve, the 16% plus the 9.2%, only 25% of the South African population could possibly, that not guaranteed, could possibly say, here is money, I would like to pay for health services in a hospital. Now, I would urge and try to ask the members to picture this. The district hospital, the public hospital, as it is now, if it was not funded by government, it was funded by the people who have to walk in there and pay for the service, because there was no secondary or third party funder. These people, these 75%, wouldn't be able to access even the public hospital in that kind of a scenario. That is the South African reality. And therefore, we are now faced with a distribution that mirrors the footprint of medical aid penetration in South Africa. And when we look at that per province, that's the graph that's in front of you. And the trend is the same. This is just to show what we've already stated. and the reasons, I think we've already touched on. We will discuss, perhaps, if the members wish in more detail about the rural, and we move on to the primary health care, which is one of the questions we had to deal with. I'm so sorry about this slide. It's so busy and crowded, but I'll go through each point separately. I'll start with the policy statement from the standpoint of the private hospital in the hospital sector. Primary healthcare is the bedrock of the health system. There's no two ways about that. We have no doubt about that. We are not in two minds. We also believe that in South Africa, primary healthcare access in the private sector should be strengthened by making the primary healthcare a prescribed minimum benefit according to the Medical Claims Act. I'm going to speak more to this just a little later, because we feel that a lot of the PMVs, in other words, the conditions that have been designated to protect those who are afflicted with those illnesses from the challenges of not being able to pay and therefore get guaranteed payment within the health system being guaranteed at the time that the people need the service. And that's essentially what the PMPs are. We feel that primary health care and preventative health should be guaranteed payment. We need a strong primary health care and wider access to improve the health, the SA healthcare outcome. So it is just to re-emphasize the point, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, that we really believe primary health care is the way to go. It's a big part of the solution in South Africa. And medical schemes, like I said a moment ago, have very little benefit, have limited benefits on primary health care and wellness. And the effect of this is this. At the point that I should be accessing health care at a primary health care level, my benefits are finished because it's not a PMB. And it's still May, 5 months down of the year gone. And I've got another 7 months. Now, if I get sick with something that needed a primary healthcare intervention, I'm faced with the process, with the prospect of having to pay for it out of pocket. And because of the economical situation that is faced by households, I have to postpone it, pay the fees for the children, pay for the food. And I postpone it, and in postponing what was initially a medical condition that could be dealt with at primary health care level, it now complicates. So my first port of call, I am forced by the system. The system is directing me to the place where people that have got more serious conditions are going to be assisted, and that is now already at the higher level of care. People are accessing hospital services inappropriately because they come into the health system to seek help very late because of the medical aid benefit design. It's directing people to hospitals. May I also allow me, Honorable Chair, to also share again, and I know members know that, the traffic that comes into the door of private hospitals is directed by someone else. There is no hospital that has touted and said, come to my hospital. The doctors are directing people to the hospitals. The medical scheme benefit design is directing people to hospitals. Hospitals are just standing there ready to receive those that need care. The traffic is directed from elsewhere. This lack of primary care in the benefit design and DMVs has therefore been a driver of low growth expenditure in the medical schemes on primary health care since the introduction of prescribed minimum benefits. Let me just explain what we're trying to say here. Everyone is familiar with the graphs that are moving away from each other that have been presented in so many platforms. And everyone is lamenting how the growth in the primary health care services has stayed flat on that graph, and how the graph on the expenditure by medical schemes on the private hospitals has taken off and continued to rise. The point that speaks to that trend is what I've just been explaining. If you have a benefit design system that suppresses the payment by the funder of primary health care system, at the same time, that benefit design system is redirecting and channeling the patient to private hospitals, you are then creating that graph, and that's what we're speaking to in that slide. And we believe that if primary health care had been prescribed minimum benefit, more people would be accessing it long before they need to go to hospital, and even never needing to go to hospital. And that graph on primary health care that I've just referred to would rise up in accordance with need and with need and utilization that would come out of that policy change. We thought we would share with the honorable members that one of the hospital groups is in fact does have primary health care clinics. But because the private hospital sector is unable to employ doctors and other health professionals, we cannot integrate it into a healthcare value chain and get the efficiencies and the decrease in the expenditure that should come out of those efficiencies. Therefore, what we have now, which this slide is speaking to, is that we've got some structural inefficiencies within the way that the whole system is set up. And where we could leverage things like referral system, integrated and seamless continuity of care, we are not able to achieve that, even though we have at least one of the groups and primary health care initiative. But the efficiencies that should be derived are, they fall short we believe, the structural shortcomings in the current system. The second bullet on that slide speaks to these structural shortcomings, and they are imposed really by existing policy environment, by the existing policy environment. But the statement we want to make is that private hospitals want to work with primary healthcare facilities in order to coordinate care and ensure seamless continuation of care for patients. That's our vision, that's our view, that's how we think health care should be delivered, and that's how we think we should be participating in health care delivery to a large extent. That means what is needed, again, from the way we see it, is a policy stewardship that is going to look at these things and look at these structural barriers that make that cause duplication and so on, and that prevent the efficiencies that we think that can still be achieved, and address these in earnest. So what we've done in summary, honorable members, through you, honorable chair, is to just share with you some of the firstly, where we stand on each of these three issues, and share with you briefly at high level some of the dilemmas that we have encountered in trying to look at a solution. And therefore, in so doing, I'm not saying we are victims, we are the ones who want to do good, and it's somebody else that is preventing us from going ahead and doing the good. I'm not pointing fingers. I'm just pointing to the fact that there is vast opportunities for collaboration, there's vast opportunities for working together, talking together, because we have the same policy goals, we have the same vision and objective regarding what the service delivery needs of the country are, and it's just us coming together in and execute and agree on how to on how to get it done. If you allow me, Mr. Chair, I would like to share the last three bullets in my opening slides that had the structure of the presentation, which is the matter that we felt it would be important for us to share with the committee, but they were not in the brief that you have given us. The graph that I've got on the screen shows that, even though the graph starts from 2000 and from year 2000 and ends at year 2012, it shows that it's been flat until 2004. If you look from 2004, and this is the total members covered by medical schemes within the entire population. If you look from 2004 to 2012, which is a period of 7 years, the membership of medical schemes has increased by 2 million. 2 million people that were not, 2 million heads that were not covered by medical aid in 2004, were covered by 2012. Now, the importance of sharing this trend for us, honorable members, is to confirm that the issue that the private healthcare sector, the access to private healthcare services is shrinking, is probably not the correct assertion, because we've just shown on that graph there's 2 million people that got access to private healthcare during that period. That is not to say that all that needs to be achieved, but it's something that we think that it worth noting that access to private health care is not shrinking, it's growing instead. These are two graphs that show again the same trend. The one on the left is showing the percentage of formal labor, the people that are in formal employment. The uptake of healthcare insurance that has given them access to private healthcare. The point again, I'm at pains to emphasize, Honorable Chair, that it's not the be all and end all, the access to private care. We're talking about access to healthcare in this country, but increased access to private care is also something that is significant because it's something that's moving in the direction that we would like the country to move in, access to care. And again, the graph on the right, it shows the same trend. Now, it's the percentage of the population. Whereas in 2005, just over 14% of the population had medical insurance cover and access to care within the private sector. That same percentage by 2011 was just under 17%. We would like to touch very briefly on the demand for private hospital services. I think before, we've only got one slide for this, but before I even show the slide, which is really just to emphasize the message is that we have seen a significant demand for private hospital services in the past 10 years. And this demand is not something that we've created out of our imagination and tried to sell it. It's real. There is independent economic research that has proved beyond doubt that demand is increasing steadily. We have heard over the past few years how the minister has articulated the danger of the quadruple burden of disease. And if you look at that quadruple burden of disease, which is showing an increasing trend in these four disease categories. Trauma and accident, where are those people going to end up? They are going to end up in hospitals. Non-communicable disease, including chronic diseases. We've just already mentioned that the benefit design structure within the private insurance industry is actually preventing some of the conditions and the complications thereof from accessing primary healthcare services. Where are those people going to end up? They are going to end up having complications and needing high levels of care. These are essentially the drivers of the demand that we have observed. So the only slide that we have here is coming from the latest report by the Council for Medical Schemes, which is listing some chronic conditions and is articulating the extent to which there has been an increase between in a period of 5 years, between 2006 and 2011, that has been observed by the Council for Medical Team. 50% increase in renal disease. What does renal disease result in? It results in very severe complications. Chronic renal disease, dialysis. How much does that cost? If you have a 50% increase in 5 years, what is it going to do to the demand for private hospital services? Diabetes type 2, the complications of that. If you don't have an effective primary health care benefit for medical age patients, and therefore you have got an erratic demand, an erratic usage of primary health care services. Let us picture the complications of type 2 diabetes. 84% increase in 5 years. These are the things: hypertension, almost 40% increase in 5 years. These are driving utilization of the services that are provided by private healthcare, private hospital providers. And the very last thing we would like to touch on before we finish the presentation, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, is the issue of private hospital price inflation. I've only got 2 slides here. The first one is just an interesting slide that I thought would be interesting, but would be unexpected in a presentation like this, because I'm talking about the inflation of petrol, Ewisa, Coca-Cola, Ricoffi. These are the everyday things that we face in our household expenditure that we can relate to. When we say the cost of living is rising, we can relate to all those, a liter of milk and all those. And somewhere amongst those household consumable products, I have thrown at the bottom row, in the middle, the private hospital, one of the private hospital groups looked at its own price inflation matching period, in a period that matches the horizon of those other holders. And that's the comparison. It does give a bit of perspective in terms of what is our frame of reference when we look at the inflation, the price inflation within the private hospital industry. What should we be thinking of price inflation in terms of before we say, is this reasonable or not reasonable? And I'm not suggesting that it's reasonable, and I'm not suggesting that it's not. But I'm just suggesting a frame of reference, and we thought that slide would be quite interesting to look at. And here's something that is more scientific. In the 2013 SSA report on health inflation, they've got all categories of health. They've got medical aid, health insurance, this private hospital, specialists, and all that. I've extracted this graph from it. The annual price inflation for the entire private hospital industry for 2010, according to SSA, was 6.9%. For 2011, it was 5.7%. For 2012, it was 5.1%. I would like to refer the honorable members to the SSA report that came, that we drew that form, a copy of which I think we've got, maybe we can provide so that it can be distributed to those who are interested in it. Just by comparison, for interest and again to know what you must compare with, the current inflation rate is over 7% for this year. That's projected for 2013. It's been around 6% during the period that we were looking at of that horizon of 2010 to 2012. But also, just for comparison, there is one of the categories in the CFSA report that looks at medical insurance. Corresponding in 2010, 13% inflation. Corresponding in 2011, 10.3%. And in 2012, 9.4%. Honorable Chair, honorable members, I have reached the end of my presentation. I would like to just mention that the information we've been able to share is high level. The devil is always in the detail. To the extent that we have that detail in dealing with the questions, we will do our best. And thank you very much. And of course, that is why we have the team. This is the Honorable Chair, not a team of observers. It's a team of really high-ranking, high-level experts that we think should be able to satisfy the passion of the Honorable Members.
I was trying to look at the scans to see whether the printer, they're going to be able to take the questions, but I think the scans are big enough to take all the questions, especially the frontal lobe. That's what I was looking at. Thank you very much, Dr. Pomela. Maybe I must address you, Dr. Pomela, first you formally. Thank you very much for that presentation. And in fact, we have touched at most of the things that we wanted as a committee. I think, members, if I could summarize what's happening in this presentation, is that it seems as if we are going along with our policies, including universal coverage and the others that we've mentioned. That's what they are saying categorically. But I think what we need to understand is that the Hospital Association of South Africa doesn't include, if I'm wrong, you'll correct me to the formula, it doesn't include all the private hospitals. There are some private hospitals which are not your members in South Africa. So I'm mentioning this because somebody might do something different and we corner you only to find that that person is not your member. So I think the members must know that. I think, well, one of the reasons, which is a policy of government too, that we need to work with the private sector. I'm not talking about the private health industry. It's a national decision that the private sector and public sector need to work together to increase the economy of the country. So it's a policy of the broader government, not only the health sector. And I think that comes from the fact that, interestingly, the biggest employer is the private sector. And the innovations that are in the private sector should be done for South Africans. And this is what is coming. So that is the presentation, members. Can we engage with it? They're here. They're for us. I just want to suggest that if people want to relieve themselves, I think we could walk out and come back, and if somebody wants to drink tea, I suppose the tea that is organized or some bits that are organized for us that are sitting at the back there. So that when we finish once and for all. So, members, it's open to you. Don't behave like Zubair. Zubair wanted to give him a lift this morning. He refused because I was driving a buggy. He thought that I'm stealing sheep around Cape Town. Now he didn't want to be part of that group that is stealing sheep in Cape Town because I was driving a buggy. Okay, members, it's open to you. Okay, Mark.
Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you for the presentation, Dr. Gomila. I think my question on, as you said, that you have numbered, I think my own head is, question from private hospitals can deliver on public health. You talk of training of nurses. I would like this training of nurses, but the fees are too high in the private sector. So meaning that some of the students of those communities who need to be trained as nurses cannot access that. So have you got education loans? And if you have got education loans, what is your exit strategy for that? So that you can repay the money. Secondly, how can you attract students? What is your strategy to attract students across the board? Also, access to training, how do you popularize or reach the rural communities? What is your outreach strategy to get students into the rural communities? Secondly, on the heading that talks to distribution of private hospitals. I don't know if those contracts, if you can get those contracts and arrangements with, for the PPPs so that they can deliver care in rural areas, so that private hospitals will be able to extend their footprint deep in the rural areas. How do you think you can make that area to go to those deep rural areas? And then on public private hospitals in the private health care scheme, that's another heading. You talk of structural barriers and fragmentation. Then you say that you need a structured encouraging integration between primary health care system and hospitals, even in private sector. Not the high prices of the private sector. I'm still having a question. How do they welcome the poor and the rural poor, especially the rural poor, how could they benefit in this stewardship? Thank you, Professor.
Hassan, we would request you to jot down the questions and then when you answer all of them. So we're not going to answer because then they come. So I'll ask you one of them, Mr. Khaled, if I had to come with the question. I've seen your hand on another number.
Thank you, Professor. At the end, Professor, the presenter really made my heart to beat. When, like, I make my own numbers, it takes 25 on the pricing inflation contract. When you compare private hospital group with a Phoenix group, with a mid-million, and you even said it's very, very well to be said, devil is in the details, to be saying that, are you really comparing what should be compared at the end of the day when you talk about the inflation? And you comparing bananas with apples. Why am I saying that? The team of Cook, maybe when you say 172, it comes from 4 rands to 12 rands. I'm just making an example. But when you talk about the price with the hospital, private hospital, where does it come from and where does it go? It comes from thousands. goes to another servant. I don't know if I understand, but I tell them, just really, it's doing something negative with my intelligence. On paper, we spoke about universal access, HASA support in universal access, the bullet number two. When you talk about the private hospital industry is ready to participate in collaboration, can you share with us what are the preparations to do this? Because we know what is the preparation of a public sector. What are they doing to really get ready for the universal cover? But you said in an nutshell, what is really, what are you really doing? We are in 20 years of democracy, and it shows very well that we haven't done well in this book, because mostly your statement is saying 10. It means that we haven't done it. It can be done. And I would like to know, really, what has been within this 20 years of democracy, what has been the, what have we been doing as private and public to really see that we work together? And another thing, Chairperson, which really, like, concerns me, I suppose it is just unfortunate that we get this presentation now, when we are just on our exit. One would have loved to have this type of a presentation whereby he can take it to the Department of Health, so that we can hear what the Department of Health is saying about the relationship with the private sector. Now, it will be there with other people, because I think it will be on our legislative board to be saying that we want to see the attempt of you to trying to work together. I spoke about the relationship. The issue, like in this setting, private hospitals are key to sustainable health care in South Africa. Then bullet two, whereby certain the country must step into the expertise that already exists within the private sector. Like I said, you are telling me that the country has not been ready for the past part of us of democracy. When you say it must help, we are having the issue of pricing, because maybe we are not helping from the expected because of the price. I know that when the patient is in a government hospital, when we nearly meet an expectation from private, we have to pay. And we find that according to the budget, the equitable budget, we cannot really afford doing that. Pricing is really a problem. Then, the issue which really even touched my heart, the issue of primary health care. And you said it well to be saying that the medical scheme doesn't really cover it at the end of the day. And like you are saying, sitting here, like you are sitting there, we understand that primary health care is the bone marrow of health. It is where we start. And that is why we can't be having those communicable diseases, not communicable and uncommunicable diseases. We could have kept them at primary health care, but unfortunately, like you have said, it's not been covered. maybe the last one. I've been waiting, I've been in the medical aid. I started with Bunters, I went to Platinum Health, I went to GEMS, now I'm in Harvard. And meaning that all the time, most of my life, I've been on, when I'm sick, I've been going to private sector. I'm on the exit, then I may be not having a medical aid to carry forward. For as long as I live. Now, because I know more, I can't support. The private hospital cannot help me. I must be going to the public hospital. How do you look around? I'm staying in there. When I'm sick, I'm going to send Crest or in one of the hospital. For life, I've been going there because I could afford. But now when I'm retiring, I cannot, I can't afford anymore. And another thing, maybe I've been suffering from TB, that's or hypertension or diabetes. In public hospitals, we do have protocol to be saying that if I'm on TV, this is the regime which I've been following. Are the private hospital using the government protocol? Like you can just, there's a racial rapid which says that when I'm hypertensive like I am, this is the drug which I should be having. Now, if I'm no more affording, then I've been in private hospital, then I'm going to public. Is there going to be a limit? Because at the end of the day, we know about multiple drug resistance in most of the diseases. If now I've been having this type of medication, now because I cannot afford, I'm going to public, which is public medication, public hospital, they give me the protocol according to standard. Are you waiting together? Can I really just be transferred and get there without any predisposing checkups of multiple drug delivery? Thank you, Dr. Sampona.
Thank you,
Dr. Sampona.
Either I grew up in rural areas. One of the people that went to us was the headman, and he said to me, if there are two people that don't understand each other, the best way is to talk to them separately. Before you make any recommendation, you listen to both of them and make sure that you understand. I think in calling you, we wanted to understand how you are working. And in fact, there's been a comment. In fact, in my very first budget speech in this parliament, as well completely, I said one of the things that we've been doing, we've been oversizing the public health care, leaving out the private health. That did not mean that we wanted to cause crises or to kill, but to understand how they're doing their things. And hence, this question that it would have been better if we had met earlier, so that we call the department to hear what they say. But it's a little bit late now. But now it has been eye-opening what you've been telling us. It has really eye-opening that this is why we're doing this thing because of 1, 2, and 3. It has really been eye-opening. But be that may, you'll answer your questions as we go along. So they say, don't lead, I might not follow, don't follow, I might not lead. Let's walk together and get where we want to get. Honorable.
Thank you, Jeff. I'm delighted that we've reached this point now where we are listening to one another. And if you'll remember, this is something I have been calling for throughout our time or when we've had the opportunity. I mentioned it to Dr. Matsualedi in present saying that private health care is prepared to come to the party. They want to help. This has been my experience when I have been to specialists or whatever. One of them actually said to me, you know, I miss working in a hospital. I'm working on my own now in private practice. And you don't have that buzz, you don't have that excitement, you don't have the interaction of your colleagues around you. And that is a very useful exercise. And he said, you know, I would love to be able to go in for a couple of days, a month, and just do that. So I think this is good, and it's timeless, as you said. And I'm very happy to hear that you are saying publicly what I have heard, is that there can be a meeting point between these two parallels, that there can be a synergy. Yes, it's going to take a bit of working on, but I do believe it can, and for those of us who will be coming back, I think we will be able to push this. I hope I'll be assigned to this committee again. I don't know where I'll be put, but this should certainly be something that goes into our legacy report. Now, I have two concerns. Young people, people like teachers, social workers, who cannot afford medical aid. Most of these young people, they're professionals, they work hard, they do what they can, but their children cannot have the benefit of a medical aid as I've always had. I know personally of people whose children have had ear problems. They've eventually had grommets put in, but they've never been able to go back afterwards to the audiologist, to the specialist, to go and see, has the hearing problem actually been sorted out? And this is because of the cost factor. Now, I know that is one segment of the community, but their need is great, and those people also need to be able to get to clinics where decent services are provided and where those specialist treatments are available. Then, of course, we've got the other people who are also very close to my heart, and they come from the Eastern Cape. The deep rural people, the people who are living in abject poverty, what can they do? How can they be helped better? So your synergy, your meeting of these parallel lines is extremely important to me. So how can we see how we can support one another? Now, I want to link up to what my colleague over here also spoke about, the inflation and the comparison of a tin of Coke, who have indicated very nicely, you know, how coffee has gone up and this, that, and the next thing has come up. And I accept that. And fuel, of course, is the worst because it triggers inflation absolutely everywhere. Unfortunately, our economy is very poor, and this is one of the problems we have. But now, I would just like to know, you have in your comparison here used low-value items. What about hospital costs? Where we are told, and I don't know the details myself, but I rely on you being able to tell me, that our hospital costs are on an over-inflated basis. Have you actually done an exercise in what the cost of delivery care on a zero-based cost accounting basis will be? We need to provide care. We need to know what these core needs are, not just what the market health funds can bear. Very often you push as hard as you can. Now, I seem to sit in the middle because I have sympathy for everybody. But I also, you know, now I'm actually talking about private practitioners, not hospitals, but just allow me to deviate here. I know that there are many GPs, general practitioners, who say that they are having to retire, can't retire anymore. They've got to carry on working and working and working just to be able to support themselves or even start with other businesses privately just to keep the cost. So somehow you have some wonderful GPs who are working and not charging too much, but they're struggling to survive. And sometimes it's the regulations imposed by our health department that make it difficult for GPs that have to have so many assistants, so many staff members to fill all the technical requirements. But we seem to be in a difficult situation. So if you could just tell me about, you know, the value of hospital care and then how we can make these needs, you know, these needs that the parallel lines meet. I think we can go forward together. We've just got to make a few concessions on either side, but I think it can be better if we were together and cooperate well. Thank you.
It's got to be up to you to answer some of the questions, especially when it comes to prices. The reason being that there's a commission that is led by Usandile Ngcobo that is looking specifically on pricing, on private health care prices. So if you feel because you're going to make a presentation there, you wouldn't like to touch the part. It should just be okay. I think this what you showed was enough and you can answer on this part. But if you want to answer some of them, it's up to you. Maybe.
Thank you very much, sir. And thank you for the presentation. Most of my questions will be in between the lines. You've given us whatever, but you said there are things in between the lines. All hospitals have got hospital boards, but your hospital boards, in what way do they attract communities, communities really in the sense of communities, not necessarily the elite? Are they part of hospital boards? Do you listen to their voices? That's one issue. We always hear that private medical health is very, very exorbitant cost-wise. Can you demystify that for us so that we begin to be able to say they're not, they are, or we're dumping Thomas's somewhere on the line? In your presentation, you spoke about South African medics that go abroad, Switzerland, UK. Do you also have medics that come from those countries in form of an exchange to assist? Or if you do, you never even think of saying, can some of them assist in the public sector? We are the Portfolio Committee of Health of South Africa. What is your take if we should one day want to do an oversight visit to some of your hospitals or to some of your institutions? And public health, I'm sorry, private health is usually mainly curative. Yes, I've heard that you are looking into the area of primary health care, but it's primarily curative, and curative is very expensive. So far, around the area of primary health care, can you just share with us what is it that you're doing around primary health care? And we, as a developing country, we do have epidemics. Do you have a role in also addressing epidemics so that these conditions are reduced in the country, or you don't at all? Or if you do, I'm sure your chances are as the people are saying. This question you may answer if you want to. Do you, in your boardroom, would like to subscribe to the health standards compliance? And in the public sector, there are many, many litigations. Do you experience litigations in the private sector or in the private healthcare? Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation.
Thank you, Mabel. Dr. Pumela, I think those are the questions. When I'm saying Dr. Pumela, I'm referring to all of you. But can I test my understanding here? When you put the coke and the petrol and everything, it was saying to me, you are saying you are looking at the percentages. You are not looking at the actual value of the coke. If you take a coke that is 10 rands today, and next year it's 20 rands, you're looking at the percentage that it increases. And hence you are saying, even with yourself, even as you said to me, was 600,000 today, and then next year it goes to 700,000. It has increased by or 10%, whereas the coal can increase by 100%. So that's what you're comparing. It's the percentages, not the actual pricing. So not looking at that this one is 10 rand, the other one is 6,000 rand. So that's what you were trying to say, that our increases are based on percentages, not on the actual price. Even if the coal can increase, because it can be written different. I'm trying to find my understanding.
Please, if you are understanding. But what I'm saying, I'm still saying is, can it not be developed by, like, I was saying that the comparison is too low. You cannot compare coke with the 600, all those things. Please, can.
Mama, I think honorable member. I'm saying, I'm talking about my understanding. I'm not talking about your understanding. They're going to answer your understanding and your question about what does it mean. Can they compare coal to private hospital? I was just talking about my understanding. Can you go ahead and answer the question?
One question which I forgot not to mention because it has been on my questions is on the issue, as you know, that people are dealing with 3 million people because of Crohn's disease, and we also are concerned about Crohn's disease that's around the corner is next year for the achievement of this, goals. I now, all of key performance indicators, yes, of course, the generalized death rate, as I said, that we have talked about today, infant mortality, and infant mortality, and also maternal physics, call for advice. Now I'm concerned about call 6 because it doesn't appear here as special. As you know, that HIV is our great concern here in the country. I don't know that in that death rate, just under general maternal, the reduction of mortality in totality, maybe you also include. I would like if just you can even just briefly to explain how is goal 6 HIV AIDS death rate or whatever, or even TB. You can include malaria, but I don't think malaria in our country, we are concerned about TB and HIV. If you can just, even you cannot go to give us a percentage, that's the reduction, if it's, you can see the reduction in your state, or you, what you see the HIV AIDS. Noting that also it can be, that death rate for the pediatrics pneumonia can also be one of the under infants, can also be due to mother having HIV, or children having HIV.
I think the other thing that probably we should have invited, but now we're getting towards the end, is the other people who are running their own private hospital industry is the mining. And that reminds me what she's saying, because there's a lot of people in the mining. We should have invited them with you, but even if we invite them alone, to see what they're actually trying to do, because the mining, that's where TB is, and they've got their own private hospital, which we don't know. But I don't think whether they belong to HASA or they don't belong to HASA, but it's one of the things that probably we should have done, and I'll invite them to come in. Okay, it's up to you now. I saw the lady wanted to be the first to go.
Okay, I'll start first with the issue on the pricing, because I think that's coming up quite a bit. So if we could just clarify that first. I think foremost it's important to mention that private hospitals do not employ doctors. So the doctors are completely independent from the hospital, and the doctors will charge you a separate bill when you are registered to hospital. So you'll get two bills, one from the doctor and one from the private hospital. In that light, if you think about private hospital now, we've got our input costs. And what are our input costs? Our largest input cost is nursing salaries. And that makes up about 50% of our input costs. We then have another 10% of our input costs on average salaries. Thereafter, we've also got costs such as electricity, food, and laundry, which all make up another 10%. So if you think about it now, if you look at a nursing salaries, what does nursing salaries increase by? They increase by the things that they're buying. And what is it that they're buying? They're buying food, they're buying electricity, they're buying petrol. So if the nurses' costs are increasing by these everyday goods, their salaries have to increase by these everyday goods. And therefore, if 50% of our costs are nursing salaries, which are based on these inputs, our costs are going to increase in line with those nursing salaries. Similarly, the admin salaries. And then again, we're also facing costs on the scarf, so that's the electricity, the petrol, and the food. So it just shows that even though our cost in totality may be larger, so it might maybe 1,000 rand as opposed to 10 rand, the fact is that the input costs are the same. So all our input costs are increasing by those percentages that you see. But in totality, we've actually contained it and become more efficient by increasing occupancy and that you're able to see that we're able to contain our inflation below the inflation that the general country is facing. And last year, the house got an independent actuary from the University of Cape Town to do a benchmarking exercise between the cost of running a public sector, hospital in comparison to a private sector hospital. Because in the public sector, we have no idea what it costs, the really costs, for a patient to be admitted in hospital. So we don't know, there's no tariff. So in the private sector, we do have our list of tariffs, but in the public sector, this isn't readily available. So this research then looked at all publicly available data. So they looked at data in the provincial annual report, and they looked at all the actual expenditure, and they used patient days to calculate the cost of providing health care in the public sector, in a public sector hospital compared to a private sector hospital. And if you see, if you do all the comparisons that you make, which you adjust for things like VAT, because we don't pay, because private hospitals pay VAT, while the private sector doesn't pay VAT. And you adjust for things like doctors. If you take up a doctor's salary from the private sector, from the private sector total bill, if you take out things like, if you adjust for pharmaceuticals, on the state, because the public sector can access drugs cheaper via the state care devices. So if you make all those adjustments, at the very end, you come to see that the actual cost of producing healthcare in the public hospital or the private hospital is very much the same. So it's difficult to say that prices in the private sector are exorbitant when you can't really compare it to anything. There are no prices in the public sector to which you can compare it to. But if you do these analyses, if you drill down deeper, you actually see that the costs are very much the same. And that, you know, you have to have data to show that one set is exorbitant compared to the other. But the data doesn't exist. And we're all facing public hospitals and private hospitals are facing the same input costs. And if you look at it, we're all competing for the nurses, we're all competing for the same scarce resources. And our costs are therefore the same. So I'm not sure if that's been clarified, that issue on the pricing.
Maybe before you come, you can discuss your budget. What you're saying is that there's no research that has been done in the public health situation. But what we know in the public health situation is that as of now, I think it has gone to about 140 billion, the budget for public health care. And the other year, it was about 120. So it is increasing too. And we've got nurses, we've got doctors, we've got the consumables that we're using, but we seem not to know. But the interesting thing is that the money that is appropriate from Parliament is increasing year by year to try and cover those things, which is happening even in the private healthcare system. Can we answer that? I just wanted to understand that part.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. The way we will answer questions really will just go around and each one taking whatever question they feel comfortable with. I think the issue of the questions that related to what are we practically planning
or what I would practically suggest should be done to try and address the need in the rural and primary health care. I think it's a similar type of intervention, so I will take it, even though it was asked from a number of angles, the question. But I will take a view that an approach that seems that would address both of them in saying practically what should happen. Currently, what we have is a very strict and written procurement rules, set of procurement rules that are mainly overseen by Treasury and imposed on the various departments. And those regulations from Treasury then direct how the departments, the various departments, set up their own procurement policies. Out of that, it has been our observation that the organs of government have been constrained in being able to engage meaningfully and being able to take on board and execute on the ideas that we might have. What kind of ideas might we have? We have the vision of South Africa from healthcare delivery perspective, where the municipality of where the Honorable Chair is coming from, of King Sabata Dalindyebo, will identify a village that is distressed through lack of service. And the municipal authorities are able to pick up the phone and say, we've been trying to get a government institution to try and service these people. But the wheels of government, because of too many priorities, are not always turning fast enough. But we can see the desperate needs of those people. The relevant authority within that district municipality could pick up the phone, speak to a relevant authority at head office of any of our groups and say, we have a need here. Can we sit down and see how you can come and establish very quickly? The private sector has always seen itself as being able to move quite fast. Can we establish a facility as soon as possible and work out the working arrangement that will ensure that you don't establish this as a donation necessarily? Donations are good and donations are necessary, but if you are looking, I'm talking now about a sustainable arrangement, but not as a sustainable arrangement of donation. I'm talking now in terms of us going forward, where the authority would be saying, let's work out something. What can we put on the table? We think that would be a healthy relationship. We think that would be a workable relationship that could address a lot of the current needs in rural areas and in primary healthcare settings. This is what we think we would be able, if the processes from the authorities within the local government, within the provincial government, and within any other relevant authority, if the processes could allow them, they will find the private hospital industry or private hospital sector already waiting at the table. That's all we're saying. then and you know, there could be many permutations of this playing out. We are saying, let's talk. Before you say we don't want to go to those areas, try us. Then when we have disappointed you, then we think that we have a question to answer. At this point, we haven't even got there. And that's the point, and that's the that's what we are sharing with the honorable members. We are not pointing fingers. We have a history that we have to deal with, all of us. We have looked at each other as adversaries. We've pointed fingers at each other. We've called each other names. We are not going to pretend that those things haven't happened. Those guys are sitting in our minds, all of us, from all sides. What we are saying is that, is there a way we can move on? If there is, let us explore it. This basically addresses even the question of what have we done within 20 years. The toiling and disappointment of operatives within the administrative structures and the leadership structures of both public and private would take all day to say what has been tried that hasn't come to anything, owing largely to the baggage that is all seem to carry from all sides. It is not only the private sector that is carrying this baggage, all of us from all sides. We are not pointing fingers. What we are saying is that it is only the future that we can do something about. The past has already left us. If it appeared and offended honorable members that I put hospital services and household consumables on the same site, the intention was not to offend. The intention was not to commodify hospital services. The intention was to say, all of us, if we are going to see, in fact, perhaps I could make an example. One of the things that, and we're not going to, if I may say so, we're not going to talk about prices on the bridge chair, simply for the reason that there is a very well structured process that is underway through a competition commission that is going to look at all the questions that people have ever asked about pricing and everything that has got to do with private hospitals from that side. And if we could be forgiven for not entertaining any discussions relating to that, 2 years is not a long time to wait, and everything will be laid out to the public to see, and they will be able to satisfy their questions or ask for questions once that has come out. But sometimes I've asked myself, when a person says the private hospital price is too high, I've asked a friend of mine, this is just an example that illustrates the complexity that goes with it, and the complexity that goes at the intersection of fact, emotion, with regards to some of the issues we are dealing with. And I've asked my friend, if it was decreased now, tomorrow, by 20%, would you be satisfied? Then he starts thinking, actually, I do not know what level would satisfy me. All that I know is that I've internalized the thing that is too expensive. And what I'm trying to get at, Honorable Chair, is this. Whenever we are given information as human beings, the way our brains seem to process it is in the context of all other things that our brains are processing. And I think that the price inflation slide that we showed was in the context of that. We have no intention, and I can put it categorically, to try and belittle the seriousness of health services and equate access to health services to the access to Coca-Cola. If that's the impression that was created, it was not intended, and I would like to put that right. Honorable member, you have touched on some of the emotive issues that go with the realities imposed upon the user, upon the recipient communities of a health service that is funded privately. And the validity of the emotions that go to us as individuals when we are no longer covered by medical aid and we can no longer access these services cannot be downplayed. It's an emotive issue, it's emotional, and it drills down to the heart of our emotions. And the reality on the other side being that if we were to accept the principle that a private hospital, a private doctor surgery, or a private anything else, that word private actually means that it's funded privately. In other words, if the person that walks through the door, let's forget about prices for a moment. If the person that walks through the door is not able to pay for the cost of the service that they receive, then you're going to have to look for a philanthropic donor or another party that is going to pay for an agent that is going to pay for that. It is the same thing that is applies both in the public and the private sector in the sense that that's because the cost or the price is not passed on to the user. Doesn't mean there's no one who's paying for it. It's just accounted for differently. And I think perhaps what Honorable Chair mentioned about the interesting in the pricing speaks to is that agent which must fund the services that are provided by public health institutions has found that they are not able to meet the need and increase the allocation. That's how I interpret it. And I cannot pretend to be condescending and trying to speak on behalf of all trying to pretend to be an expert on what government is doing in their expenditure and all that. But I'm not making and contextualizing these observations so that you can see the environment in which we live. And therefore, if then we have accepted that it is the people that walk through the door that are going to make it possible for this service to be provided again tomorrow, then that takes us to the current reality and the difficulties that we are facing. Before we even look at how much do you make that person to pay, just the fact that it is that person that will ensure that even next year this service will be there for others to access. It is that person that must fund that and sustain that service. And it is the concept that we really, that defines the world and the environment we live in within the private sector to start off with. As we talk of all these desires and the proposals and wishes for us to actually get our services and widen them to the general public, a wider public, I think it is important for it to be understood that that is where we came from. That is where, without that understanding, then everything else that we talk about, that we are now discussing, it becomes baseless from the point of view of understanding why we would like to say this and that approach. Now, that reality, there has been a question on community. How do our board interact with communities? I think I'm going to give a short, I'm going to ask one of my colleagues to give that a shot. And the reason I'm doing that is because we would like to ensure that you get the best answer that we can give you. And being attached to the operational unit, being at the hospital group, working within that environment, will give an answer that is additional to one that I would attempt to give. What, when would you like to take that one?
Thank you, Dr. Romero. I think you have belabored the point about the private healthcare industry. One time we had the private doctor here complaining that HCSA is voluntary for them. And one of the things that they were complaining about was that the tariffs that they were being given by agencies that have been regulated was that when you open up a private church, you open up from your pocket and you expect to run electricity, to be able to buy the drugs, to be able to pay the nurses, the receptionists, to pay the rent of that place from your pocket because it's your property. But you are still rendering a service to a particular person. And this is what HCSA were trying to ask. Did you consider those things? And by the look of things, those were the things that they needed to consider. And sometimes, I think sometimes the problem is in that area not understanding what private is all about and what public is all about. Because even in the public sector, if I go to a hospital, so the OPD, there's still a net that is going to be paid. If I get admitted, there's still a net that is going to be paid for. There's still drugs that are going to be paid for. There's so many things, but the question is, do I know how much do I pay for? But as we know, that the budget every year, the government comes to us and says, for this year, because of inflation, we need to push up the prices, but in God must give us more money. Because this year, this is what has happened. So I think that part is understandable. And in fact, these are some of the things that we said. When we said we wanted to talk to you, to hear you, is to hear exactly those things, what is going on, what goes on into this thing. But obviously, it's just like the traditional medicine. Anything that is not regulated, everybody has got the freedom of doing whatever they want to do. If I open up my church or I open up my private hospital and I don't go for HASA, I will charge what I want to charge. Especially when I deal with people who don't know.
And I think the bone of contention is in that area. Much as one would want to regulate, but we don't want to over-regulate. Because if you over-regulate, it's going to be problematic. At the same time, if you under-regulate, you are going to cause chaos at the center. So the balance is in that regulation. How do you regulate such types? Because I think government's work is to level the ground so that the private sector can survive. It's not only for financial sector. So anything, whether I want to open up a private mine, whether I want to open up a spa, government levels the ground for me to be able to open up that spa and be able to make some profit. But it isn't that often that we need regulation. But if we over-regulate, I'm going to be killing this business. If I under-regulate, I'm still going to cause chaos because everybody is going to be free for all. And I think the problem is exactly in that part, in that area. How do we make sure that at least there's no taking a chance because people don't know. Neither do we have chaos in that. But I'm just meaning that before you come in with your board, with the board. Okay, come in.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. In the private hospital industry, more than 80% of all the hospitals, which is the three large groups, are listed entities. And because we're listed entities, we have boards, independent boards, and the boards consist of both executive and non-executive directors. And so your non-executive directors are very much from the communities. They're not part of business. They come external to drive community-based initiatives in many ways. Now, when we talk about community-based initiatives, for example, we subscribe to corporate social investment. If we spend millions, 1% of our net profit after tax goes back into the communities. We are one of the members of the PHEF Fund, the Public Health Enhancement Fund, where we contribute a significant amount as are various hospital groups in order for that money to go back into the communities in which we serve. I think that covers probably that issue. I just want to pick up on some of the other questions that were raised earlier, the issues of nurse training. Now, there's a huge shortage of nurses in this country. The reason for that is because of the moratorium that was placed on training schools in the past. So therefore, the private hospitals have taken it upon themselves to train nurses so they wouldn't be able to serve the communities. Now, the private sector trains more than about 6,000 nurses a year. At Mediclinic alone, if I use that as an example, we have 6 learning institutions and we train more than 1,000 nurses a year. And then to come to your question of affordability for these people to be trained, the institution, like ours, for example, we pay all expenses and we pay a salary to the students to study. However, it ties them in to obviously a bursary type system where they have to spend time back working in our institutions. From the perspective of getting as much representation out there, we have a very strict recruitment policy for these training schools. They are broad and wide. The limitation that we have is that math and science post-school is a critical component, and unfortunately, it is a limitation in having people coming out of school sufficiently qualified with math and science in order to enter the nursing environment. The other area that I'd like to slightly pick up on is the issue of cost again, because I think it's a very critical component to understand. Now, let me start off by saying private healthcare is expensive. There's no doubt about it, but why is it expensive? It is expensive because the input costs to drive private healthcare is expensive. And all the entities that I've referred to earlier are listed entities. Therefore, all the financials are in the public domain. And if one looks at it, the return that private hospitals get at replacement cost of their capital is lower than the average of the German stock exchange. So understand that from a comparative perspective to other organizations. But I think the most important point that I want to make is, what is cost? Cost is not price. Price, you've seen earlier, is an inflation. Cost is a combination of price and usage. And the reason why healthcare is expensive is because of utilization. We have aging population, we have a burden of disease that drives cost. So, for example, if you using a simplistic example and not a can of Coke, maybe a loaf of bread. If you have a loaf of bread and it costs 10 rand, the problem is the price is going up by, say, 10% and it's 1 rand, 10 cents. It's not the use of one loaf of bread. The healthcare demand is requiring two loaves of bread. So it's not price that's going up, it's the use that's going up that causes the total cost. So cost is a combination of both price and utilization, and I think that's a very, very important concept, particularly in healthcare, because it's different to all other commodities in general. Just on the issue of wanting to visit private hospitals, I'm sure all the groups are absolutely welcome. From a medical perspective, you are most welcome to give us an indication, and we would be most willing to give you a tour of any of our facilities. On the issue of bringing medics from overseas, they come, unfortunately, they can't work. It's a regulatory restriction. They have to be registered in order to work. So they cannot work in their profession.
So the somebody who's got a cell phone that is on. Can we try and switch it off? I don't know. I know we've got doctors here, and doctors can be called at any time, but even if it's doctors there, there are other politicians or administrators. Can you switch it off so that it doesn't disturb? Oh, by the way, we were invited to go to the Suso, but it fell off. To that hospital that we were invited, but it fell off. But yeah, we can.
Honorable Chair, I think I've covered the issue that I thought wasn't covered earlier. Happy to take any other questions.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be quick because I have to go to another meeting too. But in the nature, in the sense of exploring possibilities, because I'm really very excited, and this is something I've always wanted, we can work together and we can make a difference. But, Sir Spottner, if you were to employ your own doctors, would that perhaps cut down the cost? I know it's useful to have doctors as contractors, in the sense when you hire them in or the patient chooses who they want to go to. I also just have another question about equipment. I think of the medical technology. When I had my knee replacement, I was being tested all the time. It was wonderful. I was so well looked after. You know, every little symptom I gave, I was tested. But that was from a medical, a pathology, I should say. Those are also contracted out, and I presume, do you pay anything towards them, or is that just what I pay as a patient? But how would that work out in bringing down costs? Just a general question. Thank you.
I'm sure you can answer that question, and even that should be a question, and then we'll call it a day.
Most definitely. If we could employ doctors, we believe that it would bring down costs, because by then we could practice care integration. Because now what happens, you see, in the private sector, you've got doctors operating in silos. If you're admitted to hospital, you'll have a whole range of independent doctors treating you, and there's very little care coordination between them. But if we were able to employ the doctors, we would allow for clinical integration, both between the doctors and also between the doctor and the nursing staff. We could also then, the private hospitals could encourage doctors to use cheaper pharmaceuticals, for example. Now it's very difficult to encourage doctors to use cheaper pharmaceuticals because they've got no obligation to listen to us. So we find that very challenging. And then your question on the equipment was, firstly we don't own radiology and pathology. So that equipment will be billed for separately. So in addition to your doctor's bill, you will receive another bill from the radiologist and pathologist. However, there are certain equipment that we do bill for, and that is included in your hospital bill. And then, if I may just also comment on, there was a question about the Office of Health Standards and Compliance, but I think but yes, we are willing to subscribe to the Office of Health Standards and Compliance, and we have been participating with Dr. Kara Marshall in all the consultations that have been going on. Just for us, we would really appreciate if there could be private sector representatives on the board of the Office of Health Standards and Compliance, and if the office could be independent to ensure that it's impartial and that that all parties are assessed fairly. So I think that is our biggest concern, the Office of Health Standards and Compliance.
Good question.
question of TV, you can switch off your head. That question of TV has not been answered. The HIV and TV that was coming from another group. Okay. But maybe you can add on, if you employ your own doctors from another group, obviously that is going to increase the cost. If you employ doctors over and above what's happening now, the costs are going to be higher.
The total hospital bill will include portions for the doctor, but the actual cost of when you include the doctor in the hospital might be lower than the two separate bills, because now the care will be integrated, and it will be care will be provided much more efficiently. So if you look at them separately, there will be less than if you combine them.
Yes, I think the TV question speaks to integration. And it speaks to the structural problems that we were saying they need attention. Simply because if you are sitting in a private hospital and that's all you are licensed to do, the continuum of care, which amongst other things, may include a hospital stay and some community interventions, are not accessible to you in the current regime. And that is why we are advocating a discussion that will take us to a wider participation all along the service delivery chain and be allowed to participate and have the relevant agents coming in at the right level to participate on behalf of the needy and the patients that cannot afford, which we've already alluded to. To be able to manage the sick patients in the mines, which are operating as private hospitals, there are two things that are different between the way the environment within the private hospital industry and the environment within the mining industry. The first one is that even though the operating model of the hospital aspect of the mine health services is a private hospital, but the way that the workflow, the way that is arranged in mines, is that there is direct communication between all levels of care, which is what you need to get any type of health condition, including TB, so that when you've got to link up with a community on the DOTCH program, and you've got to link up with a GP because there's an ailment that is requiring a GP visit and all that, within a mine environment, you've got all those. So that there are many interventions that will take place in the management of a patient that do not even touch on the hospital within the mine. And there are some that will touch on the hospital like an admission, if that is required. So that we need to work on a structure that is going to allow us within the private health sector to have this integration and this fragmentation that is preventing us from doing that is not only preventing us from being able to deal comprehensively with conditions like TB, HIV, it's actually preventing us from also dealing with some of the specific medical conditions that we were asked how are we dealing with. And therefore, going back to the integration, it's key. We have fragmentation, and the fragmentation is just making everything to be in duplicate. If we go back to the question that my colleague was answering just now, now the doctor has to take a markup, the radiologist has to take a markup, the pathologist has to take a markup, and the hospital has to take a markup just to survive. As part of the pricing of the services. When, in fact, if you have one seamless provider that has got all those already integrated. You have efficiencies and economies and all the things that go with a seamless service. Before I log off, because I'm already sitting down, there is a point you touched on, you didn't go into detail, where you were indicating that you have identified as an organ of government, like other organs of government, that there are things that need to be regulated. Without going into whether regulation is right or is not right, without even going into that, one of the messages we would like to share and insights we would like to share with the honorable members is that this very fragmentation that is taking place, we are convinced is the driver of the rising cost, to the extent that no amount of regulation is going to reverse that trend without those issues, those structural problems being addressed. We might even get to a situation where if, and this is just for example, if there was a price regulation mechanism where there would be a downward pressure on price to try and make that curve, that rising curve, come down, under the belief that the price regulation is the silver bullet. In the South African healthcare system currently, the price regulation is not the silver bullet. There are other drivers that are going to drive that curve up regardless of what is due to price. And what may happen or what could happen, and I'm not advocating for or against regulation or anything, that's not what we're here to discuss, but I'm just making an example. What may happen, you may get a situation where you're pressing down on the price because you're looking at the curve, it keeps going up, and you keep on pressing down until you kill the industry. And the danger that has been raised by our members in various forums when these discussions take place. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Most of the members have gone to other meetings. I think we need to call it today, but one thing that comes out of this meeting is that for us to be able to render a proper healthcare system, that we have got to cover everybody. Otherwise, we'll never be able to. But in doing so, we need to understand each other and not try and duplicate things. We've got to try and work together. In case there are duplications, we can come through them. And unfortunately, we're fixing a moving bus. You know, when you're fixing a moving bus, you don't have time to stop it and say, let it stand so that I can fix this way. You're fixing it as it's moving. Most of the things that we have are things that we found 20 years ago. Now we're fixing them as we're moving back. So we need to understand each other and move on for the betterment of South Africans. We would have our recommendations. Thank you very much for coming. We'll probably call you. Somebody said to me, we must be positive that we're going to come back. I'm not talking about political parties, but I'm talking about as individuals. We will come back here. And I'm hoping that all the members will be back as this member. So we'll be able to look at that again and we'll be able to call you with other stakeholders. And definitely, we have got the time. I mean, we need to talk to the department and tell them what we found from your presentation and see how we can forward for the betterment of the lives of our communities. Thank you very much. Members, I think there's only two members that have been left. All the other members have left because of other meetings. Thank you very much for being here. And to solve the problem, there was other meetings before we go to Parliament. So thank you very much. Till we meet next week on Wednesday, looking at our legal services. Thank you for watching.
The platform. It is our wish, Honorable Chair, that whatever happens after the election, that certainly we know that many of the members will come back, but we believe that there would be a handover mechanism that allows us to to keep engaging with the government organs on these issues, because they are too important for us to just leave them lying.